Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm really glad that you joined us today. This week, we've been talking about relationships, and I thought this morning that we would touch on a very important relationship that we have, most of us, not all of us, of course, throughout our lives. And that's the relationship that we have with our parents and our siblings. I want to say that I come from a fairly large family, and I always had a pretty good relationship with my parents, and I definitely had a good relationship with my siblings. I'm the eldest. And then there's my sister Barbara, and then there was my brother Joe, and then I had a little sister named Patty, and then I had another sister named Lisa. We lost Lisa when she was only 7 months old to spinal meningitis. And then I have a little brother who is actually 10 months older than my oldest son. So we stretch quite a ways, and even though there's a big span between myself and actually even Patty's 10 years younger than I am, and Danny's is like 18 years younger than I am. We still are very, very close, and I'm one of those people who gathers everybody for all the holidays. As a matter of fact, next week on Thanksgiving, there will be approximately 35 people here for dinner. And not all are first-string family, but most are. So I believe in family. I believe very heartily in having a close family because I think it's one of the things that makes us who we are. And knowing that you have family has a really good effect on you because you, if it's a good family, you never feel like you're alone. At least that's my, that's the way things have always worked for me. And I realize, very sadly, that that's not true in some families. I know people that are in their 60s that haven't spoken to their moms, and then they lose their moms or their dads and never reunite. Never make amends for mistakes that were made very, very early on in the beginning of the family dynamics. That's sad for me, very, very sad for me, because you only get one mom and one dad. You can get lots of stand-ins, if you will, but you really only get one mom and one dad. So I think it's important to maintain a relationship there. And as far as siblings are concerned, you can disagree with a sibling, have an out-and-out fight with a sibling, not speak to a sibling because you're both pig-headed and not speaking for a while. That's happened to me. But it's really important for your own well-being to make amends with a sibling. I am one of those people who feels that way about friends as well. But we touched on friendship yesterday. So today I want to keep it to kind of immediate family, your parents and your siblings. Let's bring in Shelley and let's see what she has to say about the relationship she has with her parents and her sister. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very good. Thanks.
That's good. I was hoping Elise was going to call so we could do a very snappy rendition of Happy Birthday. So hopefully she still calls in so we can surprise her with a happy birthday.
There you go.
What have you, do you have anything, I mean, your situation, like all of ours, is you know, there's been challenges just like in mine, and But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, you and your mom are very close, and you and your sister are very close again. But you've had your struggles. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Sure. Well, first of all, I come from a very small family. My extended family is large, but my immediate family is just my mom, my dad, my sister, and myself. It's just the four of us. We're no other siblings. My father was very psychologically damaged during World War II. He actually was born and grew up in Berlin, Germany. Tragically, he saw his own mother beaten to death by the Nazis, which traumatized him, obviously. And it kind of it led him into being the adult he became, because he never had any help for that violence. And although he is a very gentle man with animals, he does not treat other human beings very well. So he was not kind to my mom. He was too hard on my sister and I growing up. It was like growing up being raised by a Marine drill sergeant. So we always had a strained relationship. I always loved my dad, but as I grew up, I lost respect for him because I didn't like the way he treated people. When I became of enough age to start recognizing that, instead of being influenced by his behavior to act the same way, I became influenced by his behavior by recognizing I didn't like it, so that I wouldn't then turn around and treat other people that way. So then I started having a strained relationship with him. My dad and I became estranged for over a decade. Just recently saw him, and it was like no time had passed. But he doesn't really take responsibility or remember a lot of the unkind things he's done. His mind is in a different place. He detaches from that, you know. So it's, I didn't even go there with him anymore. I was just nice seeing him and happy to see me, and we kind of let it go at that. My sister and I had been estranged for about 10 years over a series of incidents that happened when she was going through a divorce. She went into a very bad place. And then we had been best friends for like 42 years. And then a couple years ago, because I kept the door open for us to kind of rekindle our relationship, at least get her back in the family functions where I was. And one time she came over, and it was like no time had passed. Once we got back on track with each other, it was a little awkward in the beginning, because we wanted to make sure nothing was going to happen. But then once we got back on track, we're probably closer now than we were for the first 42 years. She's grown a lot in the last 10 years. I went through a lot of changes, and we're actually more in sync with each other now than we were prior, and we were very, very close prior. So it was healthy going that full gamut. I mean, it wasn't healthy having the period of time where we weren't connecting with each other, but it was healthy having that that reconciliation. Very, very healing, very strengthening to our relationship. And then of course my mom, she's been an agoraphobic most of her life. Agoraphobia is when you have a fear of crowds, a fear of leaving the safety of your four walls, things like that. And even though she worked in the workplace for a short periods of time, it was always extremely traumatic for her. And then finally she retired about 10 years ago. So she's doing pretty good, though. She's even changed. Once my sister and I got our relationship back on track, it seemed to really benefit my mom. She started improving. So she's doing much better now, even with her agoraphobia. She's gone out with my sister and I a couple times, let us take her to the beach and things like that, which even 2 years ago would have been unheard of. So she's even growing past some of her emotional limitations through the healing that my sister and I went through.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great story, and that's awesome. You kind of touched on what agoraphobia is. You wanna explain that again?
Yeah, agoraphobia, and it's a mental illness that usually people acquire due to some trauma in their lives that makes them fearful for being out of a safe environment, which is usually their four walls, their home, their room. Some agoraphobics are petrified of leaving their room. They become so reclusive that's it. Other agoraphobics won't leave their homes. So their home is their safety net. When they're within their home, they're okay, but they can't literally walk out their front door and they go into panic attacks. Now, that used to happen to my mom. Or they fear being in crowds. Some agoraphobics can leave their homes, but they have to be in places that are sparsely populated. You know, there's only a few people around them. They can't be in crowds. They go through panic attacks. They feel like they're going to pass out or throw up. They start sweating. I mean, a real panic attack. My mom used to have them when she would be out in public. And although she has held jobs during her life, they were always extremely stressful, very traumatic. One job she held with the district, she worked for the water district for about 10 years. But she worked in one office. She had a crew of people. She actually became a manager. She was that good at her job. She actually became a manager, and she had a certain set of people that worked for her. And as long as that dynamic didn't change, she was okay. But then they started changing the dynamic of the job. They wanted her to start working on the phone. And as an agoraphobic, she couldn't be speaking to new people all the time. It was the same thing as if she was in a crowd. She couldn't be speaking to new people all the time. So once they told her that her job included speaking to off-site people from the district and things like that, she ended up having to leave. It was too traumatic for her. She tried to do it, and she would start going into these panic attacks. And within a month or two of them adding that particular function to her job function, she had to quit. And she wasn't able to handle it. But basically, agoraphobia is being put in positions of being outside your safety zone, which would be your home or in unpopulated areas, simplistically put.
Let me ask you a question then in regard to that. What did your mom's illness do to your personal relationship? I'm sure it had some ramifications on your relationship. You don't need to get real personal, but, you know.
I know what you're asking for. The way it affected me, to be honest with you, my mom's agoraphobia affected me less than her attitude towards her agoraphobia. And let me explain to you what I mean by that. I've tried to help my mom with this, and if there's other people out there that are hearing this, it might help them as well. My mom was always so self-conscious about her. She was a big woman at one time. She's only 4'11". Oh, she's like 5 foot even. I'm 5 foot one and a half. We're all short people. My mom was like 5 foot even. At one time in her life, she weighed about 230 pounds. And
wow.
My friends adored her. All right, Nan and I adored her. You know, my sister and I adored her, but she was too self-conscious about her weight, so she would never do anything with me or my friends, and my friends adored her, and she was thinking that she would be an embarrassment to my sister and I, so she never participated in anything for us, and she basically robbed our childhood of that interaction. Going to my games. Now, at that time, her agoraphobia wasn't so bad that it would prevent her from going to the game. It was her embarrassment over the way she looked. And I think a lot of the agoraphobia stemmed from that more and more and more, or maybe the weight gain was a subconscious psychological protection to give her a reason for not going out of the house. It was very complicated because she already had agoraphobic symptoms up to that point. And sometimes we do things to ourselves physically.
That's true. That is very true. Sometimes we get to a place in our life where we realize that we can't do anything anymore, and something manifests itself to protect us from having to do anything in a different way. I think I lost Shelley. We were at her 15-minute mark. This is so strange how this happens with her. But I think the important thing here is when there are issues, which more often than not there are, you struggle with the relationship, because a relationship on even ground is difficult. So for me, my dad was an alcoholic, and my mom, I wouldn't call my mom an alcoholic, but my mom was definitely she could be, but then she'd go for weeks without having anything to drink. But she was very immature, my mother. She was the baby in her growing up years. She had two older brothers and an older sister, and she was the baby. Actually, three older brothers and an older sister, and she was the baby. And my grandpa, who I also loved very much, both of those people, my grandma and grandpa, my mother's parents, were very special to me as well. And they really babied my mom. And my mom never, I don't believe, my mother died when she was only 55, and I don't think she had yet reached the maturity that I had by the time I was 16. So, which made her a fun mom, I remember she bought a 49 Chevy convertible when we were quite young, and she'd gather all the kids in the neighborhood, and if we all wanted to go swimming, this old car, you'd have to push it out of the driveway to get it going fast enough so she could pop the clutch, for those of you who even know what that means, and get the car started. And then we'd all jump in the car, and she'd take us all to the local swimming hole, as it was, and we'd all go for a swim. And that's who she was. And she also was loved to sing, sang a lot. She and a couple of her brothers, as a matter of fact, absolutely adored singing and dancing. And I do too. I grew up singing and dancing, and my kids knew that if it was when they were very little, if it was time to clean the house, I'd turn on rock and roll music, and we would all clean house while we danced and sang. I still do that today. And now it's more often with grandchildren, not my children. They just roll their eyes at me now that they're older. But that is what it is. So, Shell, you're back?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I was the whole time. I didn't even realize my phone dropped the call again. I got to get a timer here, because it's like 15 minutes on the dot every time.
It is exactly 15 minutes, exactly 15 minutes. It's really amusing. And when I bring that up to Blog Talk Radio, they still feel very strongly about the fact that it doesn't have anything to do with them. And they ask me if anybody else does that. And since the one day, no, nobody else does it, just your phone. And we're the closest. doesn't make any sense at all. So I kind of filled in with some of the stuff in my own life, but if you...
Well, what was the last thing you heard? Because I did make one important point, but I don't know at what point I dropped away. Do you remember what the last thing you heard I said was?
The last thing you were talking about is sometimes we do things to ourselves, like the weight gain and things like that, so that we don't have to do things that make us uncomfortable. It's like
right.
A guard that we put on us, a veneer that we put on us. So go ahead and take it from there.
Well, the point I was making with that is that I would have loved, I didn't care what my mom looked like. I adored my mom. My friends didn't care what my mom looked like. But she held her back from engaging me and my friends because she was not comfortable with the way she looked. But my life, my childhood would have been more fulfilling if she had participated in more of it. But she kept herself back because she thought she would embarrass me, and she wouldn't have. I didn't care. She had raised my sister and I with enough self-esteem that nobody would have gotten away with saying a derogatory word about my mom because they knew how much we loved her. And because we were openly affectionate with my mom, my friends were always openly affectionate with her as well. And they always loved my mom, you know. So I'm just saying that to anybody, if you're out there and you have kids or you have siblings and they're saying, come on, come with us, you'll have a good time, don't sit there and think you're going to embarrass people because they're not going to try to talk you into coming somewhere unless they really want you there, you know? So if they want you there, be a part of it. It'll end up making you feel better about yourself in the long run. So my mom is the one who kept herself from that. It was never my sister or I or our friends. It was her own attitude towards herself. The other thing I was saying is that I do credit my mom, though, with teaching my sister and I to be very independent, because you were asking how her agoraphobia affected us. She became reclusive.
Right.
She became very ill. One of the things is when you cannot be emotionally depressed all the time and not suffer physical effects of that, fatigue, a low immune system, things like that. So my mom was sick a lot because of her depression. And my mom always felt that she was dying. I mean, she felt that sick at times. So at a very young age, I'm talking like 8 and 9 years old, my sister and I literally had to take over running the household. I did all the shopping at 8 years old. I would walk, and this was when, you know, people didn't think of kids getting abducted, but I would walk all the way to a Key Food grocery store in Levittown, Long Island, and which was probably a good mile and a half from my house, and I'd have to cross a big intersection, and then I would do the shopping for the week and take a taxi home, you know, bring like 8 bags of groceries home. And my sister would do the cooking and keep the house clean. So we took on the responsibility of running the household. But my mom told Nina and I, as we were going through this, that she was trying to empower us to be self-reliant, to be responsible. So we never took the attitude, in other words, we never resented our childhood. I don't look back on my childhood and say, oh, my childhood was robbed from me, you know, my mom put too much on me. I actually appreciate my childhood because it made me very self-reliant as an adult. I know a lot of kids who have chores and they're asked to do things that are resentful over it. I was never resentful over it. I appreciated that because it made me the adult I am now. And you know me, I am very self-reliant. I'm very independent. I'm comfortable doing things for myself, and I don't know if I would be this independent if I hadn't had that type of childhood. But from 8 years old on, I was taking on adult responsibilities, so it always became very easy for me as an adult. And the main reason my sister and I did not become resentful is because my mom shared with us that, look, I'm doing this. I don't want you girls growing up having the problems I have. I want you to be independent, so I'm teaching you how to be independent now. And because she shared with us and just didn't shove chores at us, we had the right approach, we had the right response to it, and it actually built us up instead of making us resentful. So it was a very, you know, anybody else who looks at our childhood says, oh, my God, you know, that's awful. And it wasn't awful. It was probably one of the greatest childhoods I could have had because it made me the person I am today.
Well, and I think that a big part of why that was successful is because she did take the time to explain to you, and you did have an understanding. But one thing I will say about being seven, eight, 9 years old is the resiliency of a child that is that age has never ceased to amaze me. I can tell you, in a household, again, with teenagers, as I've said before, 21-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 7-year-old, I have less issues with explaining the way something is to the 7-year-old than I do than the older ones. And there's just about, because they're not so analytical, you know, they just take things for what they appear to be at face value. It is what it is. They don't try to analyze it in any way, shape, or form, so they deal with it. So maybe that's why, you know, I always believe that there's something bigger than us that intervenes when things are difficult and stressful. And obviously, those things happened with you girls and your mom at an age when you were able to deal with it. And one thing I do know about Shelley, now that she is sort of an adult.
Nice.
the fact that she is one of those people who rarely gets stumped. Rarely. By that I mean if she gets up tomorrow morning and there's a huge problem in front of her, she has the ability to say, okay, what am I going to do to fix this? Not, oh, my God, I can't do this anymore. Not, oh, my God, who's going to help me? Not running in circles trying to figure out how to get the hell out of her own way. No, that's not who she is at all. She would just deal with it. She would figure out what she needed to do and do it. And, of course, that's the biggest gift a parent can give to any of us.
Right.
It's know how to get out of our own way, because we talk about this all the time on the show. We can be our own worst enemy, let's face it.
Right.
And I have never, Shelley and I as a team have faced many obstacles and always figured out the best route, climb over them.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, we've even gone through them. So,
yep.
I would say that even though moment doing something like that, you can feel a little overwhelmed. You can feel a little, good word, abandoned sometime, because you feel like, you know, because it's normal to think, you know, why am I doing this? Other kids aren't doing this. You can't go there because we're all different, and of course, a very important fact is that you never know what goes on behind closed doors. So you never know what other people are going through unless they share it with you.
That's
but
right.
I think what does hunger for sure. So tell us more. So we've touched on your dad. And by the way, those of you that are listening out there, I know Shelley's mom, and she is one of the sweetest, most gentle people I've ever met in my life. So I can understand as a young woman that she must have been comfortable to be around. And that's a big thing because there's a lot of people that you meet that you think are nice and they're this and they're that, but you don't feel at ease with them. With Shelley's mom, you feel unintimidated and warm. She's very, even though she has this issue, it doesn't stop her from being sweet and warm. So let's talk a little bit about your dad, because he's another story, huh?
Well, yeah, my dad and I always had a very strained relationship because, well, quite bluntly, he was just a very, he was almost mean. You know, and again, a lot of that is from the traumas he saw. You know, I can understand it. I don't excuse him for his behavior, because then I know a lot of other people that were in the war that did not turn around and abuse other people and were not mean unkind. He was a very unkind person. But mm-hmm. with animals, it was just the opposite. He was such a gentle man. He would actually, I remember as a kid watching him pick up spiders and take them out of the house. He wouldn't even step on a spider. But human beings, he was awful with. He could not deal with other human beings. And obviously, seeing some of the violence he did, you know, at such a young age, definitely would have had an impact on how he looks at his interactions with his fellow human beings. You know, but then he meets somebody like my mom, who was very sweet and kind to him, and he treated her awfully. And Nina and I, you know, here we were both girls, you know, and he was brutal with us, you know, really brutal. So what I took from my dad, because I'm the type of person that I don't dwell on what I don't like. What I do is I try to dwell on the positive things. So my father was very, very highly intellectual, very, very, very smart. I don't know that he was ever IQ tested, but his father, my grandfather, was a genius. He was an inventor. He had a very high IQ. He was actually, you know, a certified genius. He was a physicist, and you know, he made all kinds of inventions. He was an artist. He had a brilliant mind, and my father had a lot of that intellect in him also. So I took a lot of my analytical ability from my dad, and I was also impressed by his kindness with animals. So that absolutely influenced me. So I credit my dad for those two things. And I, although he and I speak now, like I told you, we hadn't for about 10 years, we do speak now. I never stopped speaking with him because I just didn't feel close to him because of how he treats people. I didn't like it. It affected my respect towards him. I always cared about him as a human being. I never wanted anything bad for him, but I just didn't like being around him because of how negative he was all the time. And he had a lot of family members, my sister, my mom, and I, and other family members, try to pull him out of that, and he just stayed in that bad place. Now, his brother, Stephen, my uncle, who saw the same horror as my dad did, was the sweetest, most gentle man you would ever meet in your life. This is why I'm saying that I understand that my dad went through a trauma, but he's not the only one who saw a trauma like that. And here he is with his younger brother. They both saw the same things, and yet his brother turned out to be a sweet person, and my father turned out to be a very mean-hearted, towards other human beings type of person. So it's, you know, so I can look at my dad realistically and have compassion for him, but it's difficult for me to be in the same room with him because he's very opinionated, very judgmental, takes no responsibility for things that have happened in his life. And so I choose to look at that as saying, okay, those are things I don't like about him, so I'm going to be different so that my life turns out differently. So it was still a good learning curve for me, and I just wish my dad could have been happier, but that was on him.
I think you hit on something very important, and that, of course, is, and we've talked about this on the show on many times, personal happiness is one of the most important things that you can achieve. And through the years, especially at the Institute, at the Health Institute, people would say to me, if you could have a wish granted, what would it be? Health, Rainey? And I say, no, happiness, because if you're happy, you're almost always healthy. It kind of goes hand in hand, because being happy keeps everything in your body in a better place. Stress and anger and unhappiness is incredibly unhealthy, incredibly. So I would say you're actually kind of lucky that your dad is still with you after living a life of anger and unhappiness. Do you ever think about that?
Well,
are you back, Shel?
Can you hear me?
That time I did, but I didn't for a minute.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. He's here, but he's extremely unhealthy. He's had cancer. He's had shoulder replacement surgery more than once because it didn't work the first time. He's done regular, I think, radiation treatments for the, he had prostate cancer. So, and he has issues with his knees. I mean, he's in really, really bad health. And he's always talking about how awful he feels all the time. He's lost some of his cognitive abilities, okay? And what's upsetting to me about that is that after I embarked on my healing journey, now, he knew how sick I was growing up. I mean, he was my dad. He was there. He saw what happened to me. Once I started recovering, this is before he had the surgery, before he did the radiation or the chemo for the prostate cancer and all that, I sent him boxes of books and supplements and articles of how to do things naturally. He saw what happened to me and still embarked on these standard treatments. So it's, you know, very, very, he didn't want to change his diet. He wasn't interested in becoming a vegetarian. He didn't want to clean up his diet in any way, shape, or form. And this is where it became hard with me. And we used to talk about that at Hippocrates, that you know, here we can influence perfect strangers to make lifestyle choices and save their lives, but a lot of times our own family members don't buy it, even if they see us go through something very, very positive. And it's something that I experienced with my own dad. So that was kind of heart-wrenching that here I was working at a place and that experience happened to me. Here I am, perfect strangers are accepting what I'm telling them and trying it, and it's working for them, and here my own dad wouldn't even consider it.
Yeah. Well, I think that happened to all of us at the Institute, and realizing the worth of your nutrition and the benefits that there is with your health in regard to nutrition and positivity and all the other things that we learned about. And it is sad when you can't make somebody listen who doesn't want to hear. It's very, very right. difficult for you, especially when you know it can make a difference. It's frustrating.
Well, he is still around, but he has – my mom and my dad are a year apart, so my dad's only a year older than my mom, but the difference in their physical health is dramatic, because my mom did become a vegetarian with my sister and I a decade ago. And even though she still has her agoraphobia, like I said, she's actually improving with that. Now here she is in her late 70s, and instead of it becoming more locked in as she gets older, she's actually getting better. Physically, we had to take her to the hospital. It was a year and a half ago. She got bit by something poisonous. It could even be, we still don't know what bit her, but something bit her in the front yard. And her foot swelled up and turned black, and they did blood work on her at the hospital, and they told my mom that her blood work was like from a much younger person. They were shocked, you know. They were really amazed by how good her blood work came back. And but my dad's the opposite, you know. My dad's very unhealthy, and you know, so here they both have their own issues. But because of lifestyle choices, because my mom keeps herself in a better place, she's got much better health than my dad does.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a benefit, and that's also another place where you've been able to stay connected with your mom,
right.
which makes a difference too. You know, when you can think like-minded with somebody that you love, it promotes your closeness and your camaraderie. I think that I've talked before about my husband, and smoker, drinker, fat eater. I was never a smoker, but I drank and certainly have consumed enough beef and things like that through the years to have my own small ranch. However, when I realized what I was doing to myself, I still have it. Don't get me wrong. I'm about as far away from perfect as anybody can drive. But it does make a difference in how you feel in your consumption of certain foods. And now my husband, who is 5 years older than I am, almost to the day, our birthdays are 2 weeks apart, he's had carotid surgery. He's had a triple A, which is an aortic aneurysm. He's had heart failure. All these things in the last 2 years have taken place with him. And he no longer drinks. He no longer smokes. But now he's just struggling with the ramifications of that particular lifestyle. But
right.
I became a vegetarian about, I think it's been about 8 years now, and it does make a difference in how I feel. I mean, I still have my struggles because I've always carried so much weight, but
mm-hmm.
It does make a difference. The consumption of your nourishment has a lot to do with your demeanor, and anybody who tells you that's not true needs to hang out someplace like Hippocrates or another health facility that talks about nutrition and what you put in your body and what you can get out of it. Shelley and I are big advocates of learning about the nutrition you take in and what it can do for you. Now, on that note, I think that another thing that bears some conversation is the fact that how do you think, you don't have any children, Shel? Do I still have you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, for about another 7.5 minutes.
If what are the your sister, who is also a vegetarian and who follows very closely to a pretty clean lifestyle, to deal with her kids? What kind of a relationship does she have with her kids, and are they on the same deal? I know a couple of them are on the same kind of a path. One of them isn't. What's the deal there? Do you see any, can you analyze what goes on between them in regard to their relationships?
Well, she has three children. Her first child, boy, had passed away when it was only 10 days old. So she's got one boy and two girls. Derek, who is in his 30s now, is in the Air Force, and he's stationed in Germany. He's actually in South Africa right now. His family's in Germany. He was deployed on his own. Then she has two girls, Dawn and Danielle. Dawn has three children, and she and her husband live nearby. And Danielle is married to Justin, and they don't have any children. Danielle and Justin are both vegetarians. They had actually become vegan for a while and then went back to being just vegetarian. They put a little bit of egg and organic cheeses back in their diet, but other than that, they stay vegetarian. Funny thing about that is that Justin was a hunter and a devout meat eater when he came into our family, and I had, after they got married, I allowed Danny and Justin, or I invited them, I don't want to say allowed, I invited them to move in with me. I had some room in my house, so they moved in with me for a little while, and it was funny because Justin made the announcement to me that he wasn't going to stop eating meat just because if he moved into my house, and I needed to respect that. And I just very calmly told him, I said, fine. I said, I respect the fact that you're a meat eater, but I said, respect the fact that I'm a vegetarian. And I said, clean up after yourself. I said, don't let me come out of my room and find animal products all over my counter that I have to clean up and wipe up. I said, just clean up after yourself. I said, I'm not going to ask you to change who you are. That you're an adult. You make your own decisions how you want to live. And that actually surprised him because a lot of vegetarians are too fanatical, and I think they actually hurt the cause. So this was my choice for me, but I wasn't going to impose it on somebody else. But in kind, I wanted them to be respectful. And within literally a couple of weeks of moving in and seeing how I ate and seeing how Danny, because Danny was a vegetarian, she didn't change for him, he decided to try it. And he actually went from one extreme to the other. Once he started eating vegetarian, he liked the way he felt, and instead of doing it just for a week, it became a month, and then a month became 2 months, and then 2 months became 6 months, and then he went vegan, and now he's a devout vegetarian. He can never go back. He just loves the lifestyle. He loves the way he feels. He had health issues his entire life, and when he first got married to my niece, he was on a lot of different prescription medication. He's off all of them now. He doesn't take any prescription drugs. He's on. He just takes a lot of supplements and eats vegetarian. My other niece, Dawn, likes vegetarian food. She's not a vegetarian. She still eats meat. And my nephew, Derek, is not a vegetarian, although we're trying to work on him because both his kids have terrible allergies. And so we're trying to subtly teach Derek how to change the diet a little bit amongst his kids, because it's not normal. Everybody, you know, the media makes it sound like it's normal for kids to have allergies. It's not. It's a symptom that their immune system is breaking down, and there's a way to clear allergies. So I'm doing research right now, and when I have all my information organized in a way that is useful for them, I do plan to give some. You know, in the course of researching my book, I also have Derek and his situation in mind, so I'm devoting a chapter to what he and his kids are going through, so that once I organize that information comfortably, I can pass that on to my nephew without sounding like I'm preaching. And that's an important thing to consider, by the way. If you're trying to help a family member or a friend, you have to say things to them in a comfortable way. You can't sound like you're preaching. You can't sound like you're up on your soapbox. you know, this is information that I think will be helpful to you. Read it. If you're comfortable with it, act on it. If you don't, it's your life. You make your own decisions. You have to approach it that way. You sound like you're preaching or like, you know, like I know better than you. They're just going to dig their heels in, and you're going to get no receptivity whatsoever.
Well, and that's a big thing with relationships, period.
That's with anything, not just diet. That's with anything. If you're trying to influence somebody, you have to do it in a way that's comfortable for them.
Well, and like I said, you can't say you're wrong and I'm right, ever.
Right.
Because
right.
That's the first thing that sets everybody's radar right on its ear is, you know, where the hell do you get off telling me that you're right and I'm wrong? So you're right in regard, especially close relationships, because in a really close family relationship, we take... We kind of say things that we wouldn't say to somebody else if it's family, and
right.
And sometimes that's one of the reasons why people quit talking to each other, because they cut too deep, and the wound never heals, and they just want to avoid the issue. So as far as relationships, though, are concerned with parents and children, if you are estranged from a parent or a sibling and you are over the age of, like, say, 30, you're a grown-up now. And it's really important to stay connected to family. It's a support system that if you were out there really, really on your own, you would be envious of the person that has a family. And the fact that you don't guard it with the kind of respect and love that it deserves, the person that has nobody looks at you like, what the hell's the matter with you? And indeed, what is? If you are not connected to somebody that is really family. So many people tell me, oh, I haven't spoken to my mother in 30 years. And I'm like, what? Over what? I mean, did she try to kill you? What did she do that was so horrible? Well, you know, I just don't like the way she did this, and I don't like that. And I'm like, you know, you only get one mom. You only get one dad. And that's the truth of the matter. Yes, you can get, you know, luckily, there are a lot of charitable people out there that bring in kids because they see that the child is alone. But if you've got a parent someplace, or if I'm talking to somebody who's on the other side of that fence, if you're the parent and your kid was a handful and you've severed the relationship with them, call them. What in the hell are you waiting for? Until it's too late? Once something is too late...
See, in the scenario you were just talking about, as far as somebody who has parents in their lives that they don't talk to, I mean, I obviously can identify with that, and I've had people say to me exactly what you just said, all right, somebody that wants a relationship with their parent and the parent died or something like that, and they find out that my dad's still alive and I don't really have any relationship with them. And I've had people say this to me, well, what's wrong with you? And I say, look, I spent 20 years of my life, of my adult life, into my 40s, inviting my dad to everything I did, calling him, dealing with him, and after 20 years of an adult of having him never show up, never be involved in my life, and just be so negative, I just lost the oomph to try to do anything with that relationship anymore. So the last time we had spoken, this is going back a decade ago, I finally just left the ball in his court. And I said, if you want to have a relationship with me, you start putting the effort out now because I'm done. And I was. I was exhausted. And it wasn't that I turned my back on him. It's just like I'm not going to spend the rest of my life being disappointed in having him never deal with me. I mean, my niece Dawn was 8 months old before my father actually went to see his granddaughter. That's unacceptable. That is completely unacceptable. But that just shows you his irresponsibility and his detachment from the family. And I'm sure he felt bad that he didn't have a relationship with us, but it was on him. It wasn't on us. And it gets to the point where, like you said, my father should have put more effort out. He was invited over and over and over again. He just never showed up. But he wouldn't even tell us he wasn't going to show up. He would say he would and then just be a no-show. So in that particular case, I'm in a different place now because as I get older, I'm softer, I'm kinder, and I'm not saying that as a judgment on myself. I'm saying I'm kinder because I put the effort out to be kinder, to look at people with more compassion. There was a time I was very angry with my father because of how he didn't participate in our family. I've let that go. I don't have any of that anger anymore. So that's why when he and I, and it was an odd circumstance that had our paths crossed. I was with my sister. But when I did see my dad, this was a couple months ago, it was actually very warm, very comfortable. There was no awkwardness there. He was very happy to see me. So no old talk came up. And it was probably the best time I had spoken with him in over a decade. And I just left it at that. I was actually glad that it was short and sweet because it didn't open up any old wounds. And now, if anything happened, my last memory of my dad is warm and loving. And it felt good.
Okay, but that's the whole point, honey. You did exactly what you needed to do. That is the whole point. It doesn't mean that after 30 years of not speaking to a parent or reverse that and not speaking to a child, that everything's going to be okay because you take the first step to some kind of reconciliation. It doesn't mean that it's fixed instantly because the same issues are still standing between you. Absolutely, positively, that's true. What I'm saying to you is that if you never, ever, and you have, put forth effort, and if it's not reciprocated, it gets old fast. Get it. I get it completely. But on the same token, I'm talking about how you feel about what you did. It's not never about the other person. It's always about the comfort that you've brought to yourself. Because we talk about this all the time. The only person that you can change is you. The only person
right.
you can make at the end of the day, really, is you. The only person you can make really angry is you. The only person you can make really sad is you, because you are driving your own car. So the fact that you went forward and said to your dad, you know, invited him to all those things all those years ago, and the fact that he didn't show up for the birth of a grandchild and everything, those things are awful. That's mean that he didn't do that. And you've told me other stories that you didn't share today that were mean. I get it,
mm-hmm.
honey. I absolutely get it. But what I'm saying to the people out there that are in a position like that is to do what you did. When you ran into your father recently, you were an adult. You didn't give him the finger. You didn't turn around and walk away. You acted like a responsible adult. And let's face it, Shell, somewhere in there, he has a little something to do with who you are as a woman.
Oh, absolutely. And I do credit him. I explained that before. His intellect, his kindness to animals, those are the things that I chose to allow myself to be inspired by and to have a sense of appreciation towards who he was, because those things I respected very much about him. I'm not the type of person, even if I don't care for someone so much, I always try to look for something good in somebody. And there's good in even the worst among us. There's always something good about somebody. Everybody can contribute to the positivity of the world, and these were the things that my father contributed positively. He had a very high intellect, and he had a wonderful compassion for animals.
Well, and that's all I'm asking of anybody, or that's all, I'm not even asking it. I'm just suggesting the fact that you will be a more balanced, a happier person if you reach out when you know something isn't right. It doesn't mean that it's going to fix everything, because it takes two to fix a problem between two people. Two people have to work at fixing it. that, you know, I think we all get that. But the point is that it keeps you in a better place if you know you've offered the olive branch. If somebody doesn't take it in their hand, that's their stuff.
That's right.
That's not your, so you've taken the steps to put yourself in a much happier, much more balanced place. And that's all we can ask of any of us. If you, most often, people want that olive branch. Most often, people don't want to keep things in a bad place. Most of us are very sentimental. Most of us are loving and want to be loved back. I mean, we talk about this on the show all the time, the fact that we all are looking for the same things out of life, good friends, good family, you know, it all goes together. But sometimes you find people that are just, you know, like I said before, can't get out of their own way. And
right.
They never see the light at the end of the tunnel because they're standing in front of it or something. I don't know. But I do know that it's not so much to help the other person as it is to help you.
Right.
When you reach out.
Hopefully
you do. Hopefully it works both ways. In the perfect scenario, it works both ways and you both mend the fence and can talk over it now. So it can be beautiful, but if it isn't, you're still in a better place because you took that first step. And it doesn't mean you're the weaker one, by the way. For those of you that are thinking, I remember one day on the show somebody said, well, why should I be the one? And I said, well, because somebody has to. And at the end of the day, it makes you the bigger person. Well, I don't feel that way. And I, well, okay. I can't make you feel a way that you don't feel. I can't make you do anything against your will. I can physically, but mentally I can't. I can tell you it's like I tell the kids, I can tell you have to clean up your room. I can't tell you have to like it.
And the key to this is that if you do try to mend fences and be the person that initiates, I didn't initiate the meeting with my dad. It's just that the opportunity came up and I went for it. I allowed the meeting to take place, but I didn't initiate it. But if you initiate some sort of a reconciliation and the other party doesn't participate in it, it's very, very important that you don't take that personally because it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with where that person is, and understanding that they're digging their heels in because they're hurt should make you feel compassion because they're choosing to keep themselves there instead of release that, which means they're not as healthy emotionally as you are. Otherwise, they would allow the reconciliation themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's true. And that's, like I said, you know, some people, and sometimes initially, if you're the initiator and you hit somebody by surprise, they need time to digest what just happened. So sometimes it will make a difference, but it won't make a difference. So,
right, exactly.
We're about out of time. I want to do a shout out to Elise and say happy birthday to her since she was didn't call in this morning. She was too afraid we were going to sing to her. And make sure she knows that we're wishing her a beautiful, beautiful day and a happy birthday. And another friend, John, today is his birthday. I want to say happy birthday to him. I will call both of you later. A personal rendition of happy birthday over the phone, so you didn't get out of it, just so you know. And I want to wish everybody a great day. It's hump day. Go make the very best of it that you can. Tomorrow we will continue with some relationships and a couple other things that I want to discuss. So thanks, Shell, and I hope that you and I will talk later. And
yes.
Everybody, give it your best shot today. God bless, and thanks for coming by. Bye-bye.
Bye, Reenie. Bye, everyone, and happy birthday, Elise.
Bye-bye, honey.